Walking through the dark streets of downtown Atlanta with a fellow clergy person and his wife, we finally admitted to each other that we were utterly lost. Before the days of GPS, I know the people who I just blessed with backpacks, that's inconceivable to them, right? Before the days of GPS, we were trying to find an event venue for a fundraiser dinner. My colleague and I had on our clergy collars because we were representing our parish at the event. Kind of fumbled around, a little nervous, because in the darkness we were strangers in a strange land, and no one is around for asking directions. Out of a side street emerged the figure of a man, and we turned to ask him directions at the same exact time we realized that he was probably a brethren of the streets. Dressed in raggedy, smelly clothes, thin and wiry, he bounced around on his old shoes, his manner of speaking and his body language suggesting that he had perhaps been self-medicating with alcohol because he had maybe a mental challenge. But he did know where we were going. Instead of giving us directions, he elected to guide us there, chattering away to us, ever making less and less sense. He darted back and forth in front of us as we walked. Eventually, my colleague went into the protective mode and told this fellow that we knew where we were going now, and thank you very much, but we would go on the rest of the way by ourselves. Our guide quickly picked up on the edginess and the anxiety, and he suddenly stopped right in front of us. Ignoring the laws of personal space, he got close enough for me to smell his breath. "How do you know," he rasped, "that I am not an angel?" Now, this is a question that clergy with their clergy collars on have to be very careful about. There's really no right answer. I saw my colleague tightening his fist out of the corner of my eye as I asked him, "Well, are you?" "Maybe, maybe not," our guide said. My fellow clergy person thrust a few dollars at the man and got a little perturbed with him. And he said, "I don't want your money, man." He was highly offended. And he drifted off into the darkness as we realized that we were standing in front of the location for our supper. "How do you know that I am not an angel?" I didn't know. We never know. The line in the letter to the Hebrews, "Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing so, some have entertained angels without knowing it," refers all the way back to Abraham and Sarah, the time that they entertained in their tent three strangers who showed up in the middle of the desert. Hosting strangers is an ancient Middle Eastern tradition which is critical for survival in the desert. But Abraham and Sarah, by the way, it's Genesis 18, if you want to go look it up, they had no idea who they were entertaining until much, much later in the story. It was those three, by the way, who told Sarah, "You're going to have a baby." That baby was Isaac. The tradition of open hospitality continues in many countries, but while the outward signs of hospitality are obvious to us, a meal, a drink, a shelter for a stranger in need, God's hospitality is much larger than that. It is much deeper, much richer, and much more challenging. Living in the posture of God's hospitality is a spiritual disposition. It's an attitude of our heart. Hospitality requires practice. It requires cultivation, as shown to us by Abraham and by Sarah, by Jesus Christ, and by the writer of the letter to the Hebrews. They have shown us that hospitality is not just about having a beautiful table set with your grandmother's china, or making sure that the guest towels match. Hospitality in God's world means living with an open heart, living with the willingness to create in us open, empty spaces within ourselves so that a stranger can come in and feel at home. Adopting a posture of God's hospitality means letting go of hostility towards strangers. Instead of assuming that people are against me, I have to trust that people are for me. And this is a reciprocal action that happens. Today, many years later, I yearn to go find that fellow who was my guide and talk to him and find out about him and thank him and hear his story. My nervous colleague stepped into the situation with suspicion and with anxiety and fear. And this time with our fellow guide ended in a raggedy, raw, disappointing way. And we talked about it over supper that night, wondering how things could have been different. Dwelling in God's hospitality means that I have to let go of my one-dimensional way of describing other people, of assuming that everything about another person is based on one category. Think about it. Think about the one word you use when you see somebody, when you see the other, when you make a judgment. We're all multifaceted people. We're all complex. We're sometimes burdened by our lives, by our mistakes, by our sin. But we always yearn for love. We always yearn for acceptance and to be known who we are and to know others too. To dwell in the house of God's hospitality will mean suspending our endless first impressions. It'll mean giving people the benefit of the doubt. It'll mean taking time to listen, to make space, to open our hearts and minds and ears and hands to another, which is the way we open ourselves to God. Well, why? Why in the world would we do such a thing? In our world, which is full of reasons not to, full of darkness, anxiety, fear, lack of resources, why would we do such a thing? We do such a thing because that is what God does for us. By taking on this spiritual practice of hospitality, maybe we help break down one more barrier. We maybe help deal with one more regret, take care of one more resentment. Maybe we open up one more heart that needs to be healed. Maybe we help heal one more wounded child of God. Maybe we make the way open for one more breath from the Holy Spirit. Because God sees us through God's eyes of loving hospitality, we can practice doing this with one another with God's help. Do we entertain angels unawares? I think so. I hope so. But I don't think we'll know until much later. And of course, I have to give this disclaimer. Not every stranger we meet is an angel, right? I have to add this little addition to my sermon because I feel I'm not being authentic with you if I don't. Several years ago, I remember I preached a similar message to a congregation, and one of my parishioners, actually I think he was the junior warden at the time, went out and tried this and came back to tell me how he had been conned out of $100 by somebody who came to his front door. But he did it with humor. and he agreed that he should give it another try. Not every stranger is an angel. And sometimes we will stumble, and sometimes we will fall, but when we fall, there is God waiting for us down on the floor, ready to pick us up and dust us off and love us and trust us enough to send us out to do it again. Remember what the writer of the letter to the Hebrews said. The Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. And we will dwell in the house of God's hospitality forever.